Blog Talk Radio.
Electrical Lou here.
Lou, it's good to hear. I haven't heard your voice for so long. It's good to hear your voice.
And I know.
That's an inside joke.
Yeah. Then
I just appreciate you joining the show tonight, and it's to me it means I love listening to music and all sorts of music, and I get a lot of it to listen to. And I really think that your EP is awesome. I've been playing it a lot. I've been playing it on my shows. And so the latest release for Lou and True Nature is You Shouldn't Have to Shout So Loud. And you can go on truenatureband.com. And Lou is also on Facebook and Twitter and all those internet things.
SoundCloud, all that stuff.
So Lou, let's start off with with the making of the EP. And I know that you've been in music for a while, and we want to get into that and get into the, you know, how you got started and you know, into the music scene and the experiences that you've had. What was it that went into to the putting all of the songs and everything together to make You Shouldn't Have to Shout So Loud?
Okay. Well, You Shouldn't Have to Shout So Loud is a companion follow-up recording with the exact same absolutely amazing, you could even call it a super group studio band that we had first done a EP just literally the prior year to recording You Shouldn't Have to Shout So Loud called Feels Like Centuries, True Nature, Feels Like Centuries. And so that's essentially what went into like just continuing the momentum of this uniquely creative group of fairly well-known musicians and myself, you know, creating a sound around my songwriting in answer to your question. And then as we discussed at some point, maybe it was in a dream or something, you know, You Shouldn't Have to Shout So Loud has its own kind of theme and approach, but again, it's what it really happened from my experience is I had been writing songs. I'm not one of these guys that says, oh, I wrote 100 songs. You know, I've never, ever done that. I write very slowly and carefully. I'm not ashamed or I'm not proud of that. I just do what I do. And but every song I've ever written, I have a certain sonic vision. And the very first time that vision came together was with this group of musicians. So again, You Shouldn't Have to Shout So Loud. It's just a follow-up in this age of the EP. Of course, I grew up with albums. We basically try to complete what I call, and everyone's agreed, an album's worth of material in two different EPs. And each EP has a bit of a approach and a theme, but it's a body of work. It's just, as an indie artist, I pay for everything, so things move a little slower, although this process was damn quick with the way these guys work, for sure. But Shout So Loud is, what did you ask me? It's like, what is it? It's like a...
No, I think you answered it. It was like just how it started out. But if you could, could you kind of introduce the musicians that were on the EP with you?
I could give it a shot. You know, the interesting thing about True Nature is it's my songs, and I call the project True Nature just to avoid any name confusion. And at this point, I'm super glad I've done that because True Nature is also a concept band as opposed to just like I'm a singer-songwriter type of guy. But there's another Lou Barlow out there, and I formed True Nature to give my music its own kind of identity into the public arena. So I'm trying to think how to say this, you know, just a very fortunate situation. I started off meeting Aaron Cummis, who, I had known for a while. I lived in the East Village of New York for a very significant part of my life. I used to hear the Spin Doctors literally outside my bedroom window. And those were back in the days when people were like calling the cops and stuff and, you know, trying to like tell them. I mean, it was amazing. I mean, back when they were charting with, you know, their original hits and stuff. What's it called? What are their two big hits called?
I have to think. I know who they are.
If you
want to
call me baby, you know, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I was like right there, and I've known Aaron for a long time. But just a few years ago, we literally Hello?
I'm here.
Cool. Something beeped in my phone there. Jesus, we're having another technical issue. I might have to call you back on my other phone. This phone is all charged up, and now it's dying. This is crazy. But I'll just finish this sentence. Aaron and I struck a cool connection where I was actually looking for a drummer, and he said, you know, he listened to what I had done at that point, and he said, wow, you got something interesting here, but I don't want to drum for you. I'd rather produce for you. And so we kind of moved from there. Let me call you right back on my other phone. I can't believe this is happening.
Yeah, sure.
So we're
problem.
One for one. One on your side, one on my side. I'll call you right back in 1 second, John. Sorry about that.
Yeah,
my phone
no
is
problem.
Beeping
and
like it's about to die. I can't believe it.
I've
right
been there. I know. This probably will start. My phone will be beeping here in a minute.
Yeah.
But my
Let's
guest
hope
is
not.
Lou Barlow. And he's his latest EP is You Shouldn't Have to Shout So Loud. And you can go on TrueNatureBand.com and Facebook and Twitter and SoundCloud. And that's how you can connect with him. And the Facebook page is True Nature. And you can go out and converse with Lou. And we play quite a bit of his music, the True Nature, on my independent showcase. And the music is not just rock music, but it's got a lot of very good lyrics that are hard-driving and spiritually motivated, and we're going to talk to Lou about that in just a minute. Also, so we should have Lou back here in just a minute. Okay,
hey,
Lou, you there?
Yeah, I have two cell phones. I'm so sorry about that.
Oh, that's not a problem. We're
you ever
fighting
had any technical difficulties, my friend?
Oh yeah, we're fighting the technical demons, and it happens from
Jesus.
Time to time. They like
yeah.
to jump in and cause havoc, the little gremlins. But
that's why I called myself
talking
Electrical Lou when we started, because I felt like something's going on with the fundamental power here. I don't get it. Anyway, talk to me, bro.
Well, you know, it's really interesting when you were talking about your producer and you
yeah.
know working with the Spin Doctors. Now, when you do that, you make a musical connection with somebody that you're going to trust. I mean, producing your EP is that's a pretty big step. So you got to be in the same line with them, because Lou, I've talked to musicians before that have gone in with, you know, okay, this is what we're going to do, and the producers kind of will move them one way or move them a different way. Sometimes it's
yep.
good, sometimes it isn't. How did
yep.
you know that this was going to work?
Well, I did not. And that is a wonderful question you asked me, because Aaron is maybe the third producer that I've ever worked with, and I was just overjoyed that it did work. I love working with Aaron. He arranges my songs better than when I walk in with them. He brings out the best in my voice, and the productions we just walk away with are just incredible. I really appreciate, you know, my connection with him. But the day that this all started, I was quite timid, because I only basically knew him as most people do, which is from the Spin Doctors. And I call that, like, he's the king of the funky white boy thing on the drums. And that's great. That's awesome. I'm a big fan. But that's not what I do. So I kind of, when we started, in my mind, questioned, you know, if this was the right direction or not, because I had had previous producers. And that was the whole kind of concern of mine, is that, and that was kind of touched upon earlier in this conversation before it got broken up for the third time or whatever,
we will move forward, yep.
Yeah, cool. You know, which is just that it's really tricky to strike what I call a sonic vision. And when I think of great artists like Peter Gabriel, David Bowie, John Lennon, many, many others, you know, the artist has a vision, and it's in the producer's hands, and then the choice of musicians makes a big deal. You know, at the end of the day, we're all just like one person, meaning like I'm a guy, I have one voice, I can only play one instrument at a time. You know, brilliant people like Prince and so forth Paul McCartney can make entire albums by themselves, but I'm not quite that kind of a musician, but I admire them very much. I don't even aspire to do that. I appreciate working with people who bring these amazing colors and textures and things that I would never think of. But to your question, it's really from a creative point of view, that's the big question that you ask, John, actually, is how do you get the right people around you? And so very quickly into it, Aaron displayed his rich ability to just be an incredibly versed musician and tap into what I was trying to do. I'm just saying he's known for being in that great band, but
right.
He as an individual is incredibly versed. And people who really follow the Spin Doctors know that Aaron is like most known for a multitude of side projects, and he's truly a great producer. And he's a little like old school in the sense that he's not a tech head. He's got a great engineer, and he sits back kind of the way, what's his name with the big beard that's so famous, the producer, please help me, John, the guy who's like,
I'm not sure.
Yeah, I know, I wasn't being terribly clear there, but he's like, Aaron is like a producer who is all concerned with the creativity, and he lets the technical, things be done by the engineer and everybody else. And I think that's a really cool way to produce. He's all about the music.
Well, that's what I would want if I was
Rick,
going into
Rick,
the studio.
Rick Rubin, that's what I'm thinking of.
Oh, okay. So when you started working with Aaron and you were going through the music,
yeah,
and you were starting to hear, the takes and everything was coming back.
Exactly.
Were you thinking, okay, this is exactly where I want to go, or did it take a little while to get there through the process?
I almost wonder how interesting this is, or not, for people to listen to. I was pretty blown away because we struck, that's the whole beauty of it, is we struck an incredible chemistry between the choice of musicians, the ability to get their interest. There were a few moments that took me adjusting. I would almost say, oh, man, I'm a little nervous to say this. I guess a little bit on the guitar side just because I'm a guitar player. But everything that Jerry Leonard did, I've now thoroughly lived with because we are talking about something that was done from the recording point of view a good couple years ago. There's always that wonderful learning curve where people do things that you wouldn't expect, and that's the whole reason why you end up enjoying their voice coming into your songwriting, is what I would say about that.
Yeah, and I think that's really cool. I think when I talk to people that do that, I know, Lou, you were talking about being an indie artist. You know, you have a lot invested in this. And so, that kind of changes things, too, because it's basically like time is money, and you want to get
really
the best you can. Yeah, it's not like you're sitting there with some huge moguls, taking
right.
in, dumping all the money, which is also can be good and bad because, people can talk about, I want to get this big record contract, but then also sometimes that can take you places you don't want to go.
I know exactly what you mean.
Yeah, what do you think about the indie movement right now and people being, even people like, the Foo Fighters have done things on their own label and done things separate from the music industry and the record industry. In 2014, where do you see this, Lou? I mean, as far as the music industry is going, do you like where it is right now or do you think, how would you gauge it?
Well, John, man, that you actually opened my mind to a few different questions all within what you said, and I love that. I think that if you have that indie drive, it's not really an indie drive. That kind of sounds silly, like we're talking about car racing or something. If you have
the Indy 500,
an artist,
yes, last weekend.
Yeah, right, the Indy 500. Exactly, Indianapolis. If you have that drive as an artist and you're not in that relaxed place of like, oh, another album, that's so much better if you really have something to say, and almost like wondering, how in the world can I pull this off? And that's exactly where I stand now. I have a new record that is just in my head, you could say, or just on my computer and in my fingers on the guitar. That's where it lives. I'd love to realize it. So I'm actively in that place of, wanting to keep creating. And I kind of you know, I've never been that like Keith Richards, who's, you know, sitting back in a recording session and can afford to blow a day or a week on a high budget. So I don't really know. I certainly admire everything he's done, but I think that, you know, when you have that fire, it's so important to want to be so just awake with it and fresh and everything, so that you're really sensitive to everything that you're trying to put out to the world. And when you're in the recording process, that the musicians are completely aware of, you know, what you feel about, you know, every little part of it. I think that the indie music scene, I mean, and you give an interesting example when you say the Foo Fighters, because we could easily say, well, they really could do anything they want. They could have a major label deal.
Correct.
And the fact that they, you know, opt to do an indie thing says that, you know, Dave Grohl and company wants to create what they want to create. They don't want someone coming in and saying, oh, boys, well, you know, you've done this and this is great, but we need, you know, more of a pop hit here. You know, they don't need that. And I honestly think that Clive Davis has only helped Dave Grohl enormously, from what I understand, because you caught that in the documentary about, I think it's called Back and Forth by the Foo Fighters, the documentary. Have you seen that, John?
I have not.
Well, please check that out. It's amazing. It's been a little bit of a DVD Bible for me because it is Dave Grohl, someone who on the one hand doesn't need to be so pure and honest and real and from the heart and everything, and he goes back to that. And I just love their last records so much. It's been such an inspiration to me. And Clive Davis actually at one point encouraged Dave to do what he wanted to do. So, and in the documentary, Dave talks about that a little, because Dave apparently felt stuck and wasn't sure if he could do like an acoustic thing or a hard rock thing. And it seemed to be a big deal to Dave that Clive Davis stepped in and said, you know what, you can do them both. So you'd have to see a documentary for that to really have impact. But, you know, think about all he's been through to even say that in the past 5 years. And then you go back to a guy like me who's still trying to, like, break out and get out to people. And, you know, my focus is, like, in many directions because we have the two EPs, and in live shows I'm trying to just, you could say, promote or do a live version of you know, the body of work that we have recorded with different musicians live, by the way. And then at the same time, when I go home at night, you know, I'm working on a new album in the hopes, I don't even know how I'm going to fund it, but in the hopes that it gets out there.
When you were laying down the tracks for this one, Lou, did you have it in your mind, and I know some musicians tell me they do and some don't, that how you're going to translate this onto the live stage when you play it live? Was that a part of the process?
No, not for me. I kind of wish I had thought about that because I've created a monster. I've definitely created a monster. In fact, that's been the very thing that slowed things down for about a year and a half, because I was just very touched to get the studio band together that I did, and I don't think we've still quite talked about that, but of course, with those guys, you don't do anything. You just let them do their thing. And then when I try to recreate that live with musicians that aren't on, like, world tours and stuff that I can access and are interested and so forth, I found it more of a challenge than I thought it would be, but then that also, once that happened, I was like, oh, yeah, duh, you know, who in the world is going to play a Tony Levin bass line except Tony? And so we've actually stopped trying to create the bass lines. Like, those are just permanently for the recording. And a few amazing bass players that I have, I'd rather they just bring their own thing to the table than try to play that, like, rare one and only kind of voice that Tony holds. And in a similar way on the guitar, in a similar way on the drums.
You hit an interesting point there, and because, you know, I play the bass, and I always,
cool.
The first thing I always hear. Now, and I'm just going to ask this kind of from a selfish perspective. When you hear a bass player or when you're working with somebody in the studio, what is it that you look for and want from a bass player?
I mean, it's easy to say, looking back on these recordings, I want a lot of interest. You know, certain kind of old school R&B music. You just need a bass that grooves and kind of hits the root, and that's awesome. And locks with the drum. So it depends on the genre of music. But with what I do, you know, we kind of veer into a little bit of a prog rock thing that I don't really like to hang my hat on that. I'm still trying to write marketable rock pop kind of music, you know, a.k.a. the Foo Fighters, Peter Gabriel, U2, stuff like that. But there's a little bit of that musicianship happening in the True Nature stuff that I've done. That when I think of the bass, I'm like, you know, yeah, you know, fucking go for it, man. You know, when we finished the recording, Aaron and I were smiling like, you know, I don't know how to say this live on the air, but we're just so kind of naturally high on the process. He said, Lou, you're going to be listening to those bass lines for about 6 months before you really hear all the notes that were played on your songs. And that's true. That's completely – now we've definitely had more than 6 months since the sessions, and that's absolutely true. There's a ton of interest on the bass, which isn't always appropriate for every kind of music, but I'm happy that it works so well on the kind of rock, you know, guitar work that I do that Tony fit in as he did. It was just one of the highlights of my musical adventures so far, for sure.
Well, yeah, that's interesting to me because I always think that – you know, when I hear people say, well, you know, I didn't have a bass player, I used a guitar player, I used this or that,
mm-hmm.
and I can almost tell, you know, right away if somebody is a bass
sure.
player or not. And they have this just, it's their own universe they're in, and it's just amazing. I mean, I always look back at Jack Bruce and think, how did he do, mm-hmm. or still does, you know, what he did? And I know mm-hmm. he was all over the place, but he's kind of created his own kind of thing. And I'm always interested in that. You know, when you're like, you're the songwriter. This is your baby, right? This is Lou Barlow. This is True Nature. You want people to know what your music's all about. But still, you have to rely on other musicians. The question I have is, and you did, I think it was during this
That's
session.
That's the fun part, relying on other musicians.
Yeah, I was going to ask the question about when you're doing solo work as like, you know, Lou Barlow is out solo work. What do you like about that? And what do you like about being in a band? What is it that is more appealing one way or the other?
I'm wondering, I like to think that we're not having this issue I've had a few times over in the past. You know, I'm not the Lou Barlow that you're thinking of, correct?
Yeah. I know you're not the Dinosaur Jr. guy. Yeah.
Right. Okay. Just to clear that up. Cause I mean, I'm kind of tired of talking about that. I don't go on stage as Lou Barlow and answer your questions. I'm really not. I mean, and by no means not to be rude or anything, but all I do is True Nature stuff. So I'm not sure what you mean.
No, I was just thinking. As a solo artist, if you would.
Do you mean
things,
like if I play a show like without a band around me? Is that what you mean?
Yeah, just as you. Have
performing
you ever done
live?
That? Well, anyway.
Performing live.
And what I'm trying to get at is some people like being, whether you call yourself Lou Barlow or you call yourself True Nature,
sure.
it's still your gig, right? It's you. But if you're in a band with other people and you're sharing the whole thing with more people, mm-hmm. you know what I mean? It's not your project. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that makes sense. I found two things to that end. One is that you know, for reasons of economy, for reasons of being versatile, I want to be able to do a gig where it's just me on stage and my guitar. And for me, that works, but it doesn't seem to work for the audience because I pretty much only play electric guitar. And the nuances of what I'm doing seem to get lost when the full band isn't around me for some reason. I mean, maybe if it was a bunch of musicians in the audience, they'd be like, wow, that's really cool. But your general audience, and I've definitely done that because I've tried to hit all, I mean, that's been the easiest way for me to play all around on the Northeast and, you know, but you always have these people kind of like staring at me, kind of going like, wow, this guy's got a lot going on here, but I'm not really quite sure what it is. And then when we play with the full band, they're like, oh, okay, they're got it. Like, I kind of think if I could really, really strip down my approach, I would at the very least need a drummer. It would be something like, what do they call it, the Black Stripes or the White Stripes?
Yeah, the Black Keys and the White Stripes.
I'm thinking of Jack White and his wife's sister, whatever that is.
The White Stripes.
You know, the White Stripes. Yeah. So I'm thinking, like, at the very least, I need a drummer to show the audience, okay, section change, rhythm change. You know, that's the very fundamentals of my music. But it's fundamentally a big sonic vision. I often say to people, you know, what would Bono do? You know, like, there's a few U2 ballads that work, and they're beautiful when The Edge and Bono play them in those huge shows, but the majority of their set with Bono's intensity vocally just does not work with just Bono and one guitar. You can't do a whole U2 set that way. And I can't imagine someone arguing with that. You know what I mean? And that's how my music kind of pans out.
Yeah, and that's what I was trying to get at, was basically, you know, you're out there as yourself. This is your stuff. You're writing the music. This is you. And you used Bono and U2. And, you know, sometimes I look at, like, the Rolling Stones, and individually, none of them have really knocked anyone's socks off individually. Jagger's had some solo stuff that hasn't really worked. But together as a unit, when they're kind of, you know, depending and leaning on each other, it's a whole different thing. Now, I know you've been in bands in the past. Talk about that experience where you were just like a part of a group, and now this is basically you've got the steering wheel. I would think if I wanted people to know who I was as a musician, that's what I would do. Was it difficult for you to do that? I mean, to break away from being with a group of guys that were like equally to get hooked in?
Right. Well, my trajectory, if you will, or path to this point is slightly different than what you described. All I've done my whole life since I was about 7 is try to create an original band. I have not – I mean, there's literally like 1 or 2 artists that I've played guitar for. I don't think this is the place to name drop them. So in a way, that's a blessing in the sense that I've been ultra-focused on realizing, you know, I don't like to use the word my, but just, you know, realizing, like, the true nature, vision, and staying true to that. But on the other hand, it's been a little bit of a – I've often felt like, God, instead of, like, on the break you and I talked about, we both do a little bit of IT-type work, you know.
Right.
And, you know, in a way, I wish I was, like, a sideman instead of, like, a stagehand, you know, because – I haven't had the experience of working in a lot of bands, to be honest with you. I have been in a lot of bands, but just to clarify, they've all been my original project.
Okay.
I mean, since a very young age, all I've tried to do is form a group around songs I've written. It's that simple. It's pitifully simple. That's the whole story.
Why don't you talk a little bit about that, like the beginning of your musical career, Lou, when you started out and some of the first, like, the influences that you had and some of the first songs that you started writing?
Well, it's been a slow, rough path in the sense, not really rough, but, like, it's taken, like, I've always, like, loved such great musicians. Peter Gabriel, like, clocked in, like, big time. You know, there's a song, Big Time, right? Clocked in big time for me. For the particular reason that he struck a balance of incredible musicianship, a very healthy feeling in his music. He's kind of into psychology. I like to think it's a little bit spiritual. And, you know, when you look at bands, you kind of wonder, like, where do I fit in? Like, what do I really relate to? And from a young age, Peter Gabriel hit my heartstrings strong. You know, I love Led Zeppelin. I love Joni Mitchell. I love so much music. I love classical music. It's not that I don't really appreciate a diversity of music, for sure, but I come back to, like, what can I do? And I don't think I sound anything like Peter Gabriel. I just think that when I was young, he influenced me. In a sense, he opened a door that was just like, wow, you know, I'd like to do something like that. He felt like a healthy example of creativity, of well-being, of spirituality, of an incredible amount of interest in his music to me, that I just, like, was aspiring for that. And so for a long time, John, you know, with a standard that high, it did not really come together. I had all these kind of weird bands through the years, and we, you know, Some of them only play like one or two gigs. Just always trying. And then, as I said earlier in this awesome radio interview, that, you know, it was when this studio band came together. It was the first time my sonic vision had really come together. And you got me thinking about my childhood, but like into my adult years, as I said, I had two producers. We did some pretty cool recordings, and I'm actually still pulling from them. I'm actually going to redo a song on the next record, if depending on how I can get everything together. But the vision wasn't right. Like it wasn't, you know, clear to my songwriting, is what I would say. There's always, you know, you've been talking about this from different angles. There's always that sense of bringing a lot of people into a recording or creative situation and the vision being lost in the process rather than being realized. And so I find it quite amazing. You know, I mean, believe me, bro, I was, you know, quite nervous for our first session to be like, wow, I'm going to meet Tony Levin and he's going to play my song. And I was like, holy bazonkas, what the heck is that going to be? And what I found just so amazing was their focus. I'm like, okay, Lou, what do you want? You know, it wasn't this whole, like, showmanship thing. It was just like, I mean, not like we sat around for hours by a fireplace and discussed that, but just the point is they gave a lot of focus to, like, to, it was unspoken. It wasn't a, we didn't need to sit around and talk for a long time. They were just, are incredibly in tune musicians. And it really was a new moment for me, for sure, because sessions are, as you probably know, you're talking about this, now I'm wondering about you. You say you play bass, you have this awesome radio show. I'm imagining you have something you've been trying to do in music besides the radio show. And it was an amazing thing. The point is they were the easiest sessions in my life, much to my surprise.
Wow.
You know, everything prior, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's,
yeah, you know, everything
feel
prior
really
to that
good,
was
though.
Like, yeah, hell yeah. I mean, again, the sessions are like 2 years in the can, and I'm still feeling good from it. So, yeah, it feels terrific for sure.
Well, my guest is Lou Barlow from the band True Nature, and You Shouldn't Have to Shout So Loud is the newest release. I highly recommend it. And go out on the website, truenatureband.com, Facebook and Twitter, and it's on SoundCloud and probably all the download vehicles out there. And I highly recommend it.
If you go to TrueNatureBand.com.
Yeah, TrueNatureBand.com. And I'd like to ask a couple other questions, Lou. I know that we talked, you know, a little bit about your beginning as a musician. Mm-hmm. What has driven you to just continue? Because, you know, I think you're incredibly talented, and I enjoy your music a lot. But as an independent musician and as a musician in 2014 or in any time, it's not the easiest thing in the world to do. And there has to be this motivation. There has to be this drive. What is it for Lou Barlow that drives you to continue to say, like you talked about your vision, and you've got this vision, right? And what is that? Explain it to us.
Well, you know, that's a good question. I mean, I've just had it for so long that, like, there's no way I'm going to stop. This is what I do, and I've already faced the obstacles. You know, we've had all the real-life obstacles. I mean, in direct answer to your question, I thought that – things would have been, I mean, it's an honor to be on your show and right now and all this and to have these recordings under my belt. But I kind of would have thought we'd be playing arenas at this point in time is what I kind of felt in my heart about the path or the trajectory of, like, where things were going.
Right.
But it doesn't matter. Like, you know, I just worked, like, as a stagehand an incredibly hard week this past week. I mean, I was sweating out of pores. I discovered new pores in my body this past week. I was sweating so much. It was unbelievable. So great. It's like purification. But I didn't think I'd be doing, like, side jobs at this point in my musical career, but I am. It does not diminish my vision one bit, though, in answer to your question. I'm just completely determined to get this out there. I think things happen in a larger timing that we can't always orchestrate as little people that we are. What is the vision you're asking me? Is that what you keep?
I know you've
got
it.
I don't have a, because, you know. Oh, it's there. Yeah. I mean, I like to think it's apparent in the music, but I don't have a statement to answer that. I mean, you know, in the there's the general description of the music, but that's not really the vision. You know, there's a spiritual, modern. I love to emphasize modern. The next recording Because, you know, I think the music appeals to classic rock audience, but I've always insisted that it's modern rock. And I think that there's a lot happening with music now. I'm actually more inspired by some of the pop music coming out these days, which has nothing to do with what I do, and it's not especially influencing me. But the interesting thing to me is there's always this big space for, like, where is the next rock band? You know, I don't think music goes forward, or rock, you know, popular music goes forward without a rock band being, you know, there. I think a few years ago, the Foo Fighters are there. They haven't put out an album in 3 years. So I'm kind of wondering, like, you know what I mean? Like, you tell me, man, who is the big rock band right now? I'm really curious. What do you think? Because I don't know.
Well, that is probably one of the most interesting questions I've been asked.
I mean, new rock band. I don't mean like Black Sabbath.
Oh, I'm telling you.
That's awesome. But I mean, like, who's the new rock band?
Well, okay, the answer to that would be from
True
what
Nation?
Perspective? Because, yeah, I mean, you've got – Yeah, that's.
I mean, Imagine
that.
Dragons is cool, but they're not like rock. They're cool.
Well, you get into groups like. Have you heard of a band called Temples?
Oh, sorry, I wish I did.
Yeah, check them out.
I like the name.
You get into like the alternative rock scene. You get into the psychedelic rock scene. You get into all these underground rock scenes. I mean, Lou, there is so much music out there. It is totally overwhelming. I hear bands that I think. What happens to me is I'll hear a song, I'm either thinking, when's this going to end, or I want to play it again. And with bands that what happens to me is, Lou, is like if it stirs something within me that I think, wow, that's not – they're not trying to repeat something, like you said, you know, something from the past.
Mm-hmm.
They're tapping into that universe of music. Now, I would have to say the bands that come to my mind right now, there's a band called Temples that I think is really good, that they're touring the U.S. right now, but they're not popular, but I don't even know if they ever will be popular, because to me, it's like, would I say, like, some band that's on television or on the radio, because I don't listen to a lot of that, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I don't think because they get a lot of hits on you know, YouTube and things
Twitter,
like that makes them any
YouTube,
good.
Right.
Yeah. What do you think of that? I mean, there can be bands that are just unbelievable that people aren't hearing. And, you know, and it's like that's one of the reasons I've been doing this for 6 years. I've been
And I so appreciate that, man.
And I tell you, people listen to this, and they listen from all over, and, you know, they'll be able to see, okay, I'll turn on my normal radio, and I won't hear this. But, you know, I would have to say a lot of the rock bands right now are selling out to a lot of sounding alike, and they're trying to be commercial. And to me, that's just kind of the opposite of what I think rock is. I think rock is something that folks, that it comes from within, and that's what I like to talk to songwriters about. It's like when you're writing a song, seriously, think about it. It's like when you're sitting down as Lou Barlow of True Nature, and you're starting to think about a song, and you're coming up with, we played Only Love, which I think is an amazing song. It's something that can continue. It's just not a surface song. It's got a great meaning to it. So, to me, that is what I look for. I look for something that has substance to it, something that's going to, you know, that's not just going to, you know, be, oh, that's got a great beat or the bass part's pretty cool, but the whole thing is there. So, let's ask, I want to ask you a question about your songwriting.
Sure, man. This is a pleasure focus like this. I love it.
When you started writing songs, how did that whole process start? I mean, I think you said you started pretty young, but, you know, I know if I've asked this question probably 200 or 300 times, maybe more, I probably have that many answers, you know, because, some people, I've talked to guys, Lou, that say, well, I go into like a meditation, the whole song comes to me. Yeah.
Right.
I've talked to people that, you know, are very incredible musicians that construct, compose music. I've talked to people that the whole song just pops in their head. So it's like you're driving down the street. What's the process like for you, Lou?
Well, I'm kind of like the things that you said. Like, it's I like to hope I have a really cool answer for you, because it's not really about the song as such. It's about where the collective conscience of this world is, if you will, and I don't mean to be getting on any kind of pedestal or anything like that. It's just that I've sat deeply with different kinds of music, and I do feel that what I'm just going to generically, and I'm going to sound like a Johnny Carson generation or something, but like, you know, what I call popular music. Like, I think that popular music, like Rihanna is kind of hip to me now. I think she's really cool. I like Lady Gaga very much. Oh, man, I'm really digging a new art. Well, she's not that new, but she's has a wonderful new album, Saint Vincent. Oh, my God.
Yeah.
I'm just completely, like, blown away by her. I think I just named three females, so that's awesome. But the only thing is I can't think of any dudes that are, like, rock bands that, like, inspire me. But anyway, when I sit down to write, like, it's just – it's not about – fabricating a sonic, it's just about trying to feel where people are at, where I'm at, where what could I do that would be beneficial. You know, I definitely think that someone like John Lennon worked in this manner, because his songs just hit the heart. Some of them are really raw, and some of his songs are incredible masterworks of songwriting, but some of his stuff is pretty, like, raw, just like you know, he didn't go to great extent to make a fancy production. He's just like, this is what I feel, and there you have it. His feeling was brilliantly clear in everything he touched, and that's what I just not only love about John Lennon, but I always, like, hope they never play him at bars, because I'm going to burst into tears or something when his music comes on. It just, like, he pulls something out of me that's, like, unbelievable. So I'm trying to just write from a point of view of, you know, I live in New York City. I have a good barometer on reality and, you know, what people are going through. Or you could say the opposite. Maybe we're a little extreme here. That's arguable. But, I mean, God, I hope your fans are interested in this kind of level of process as a songwriter. But I don't, you know, I mean, the one thing I don't do is turn on the radio and think, oh, God, I'm trying to sound like the next guy, or how could I fit in with what's being accepted now? I don't think like that. I never have. And that's one of the things I like, you know, about St. Vincent is she's this amazing, you know, fashion-oriented, brilliant songwriter, and she plays the guitar. And when she picks up that guitar, it kind of blows my mind, because the pristineness in her sound, I wouldn't think would come from a guitar player's writing, but it does. And so that just gives me so much hope that, like, you know, you can craft things from what you're used to, but then you can turn them into the most contemporary presentation if you have the talent to do that. She does, and I'm trying to do that in my own way, for sure.
Yeah, and you hit on a good one, because St. Vincent, if people haven't heard, it's a little different. And, you know, I've gone out and listened to some of the reactions to the music. Some people love it, some people don't. But I think that's what you got to take the risk for, you know? I mean,
yeah.
You play – to me, Lou, the main thing when people talk to me about it, and I, you know, talk to a lot of different musicians, it's like I look for – it might sound corny, but I always look for honesty. And
nice.
Look
no,
for,
no, that's the whole point. That's the whole point, actually. It's wonderful.
Well, when you – yeah, you talked about John Lennon. When you listened to Lennon's first solo album,
King of Honesty. Who's the King
oh
of Honesty?
Gosh.
John Lennon. I mean, Jesus Christ. He's like, I
oh
mean,
my
come
God.
On.
You
I mean,
can't
there's,
get,
maybe there's
yeah,
others.
Yeah,
you
talked about being
raw. Up there.
Yeah. Yeah. Let's sing about my mother. You know, where
yeah.
it's like he's yeah he's he,
oh
and he didn't have to do that because
right.
being at his point,
he didn't have to do that.
Yeah, after
he didn't have to do that, but he did it. But he did do that.
Yeah. Yeah,
when you've
and
seen
I think
him sing Mother, the footage of him singing that in front of that huge audience, it's just – that's why I don't want that to be played like when I'm out in public at a party or a bar or something, because it's like – it just pulls my heartstrings. I mean, it's just so touching. My God, John Lennon is like – and then he – oh, my God, don't even get me started. It's too much.
Well, you know, we hit on a really good
song about Julia. Because, a song about Julia as well. You know, I mean that's
yeah.
Like,
well, I think one of the things that with Lennon that people loved his pop music and they loved the Beatles, but when he started getting into Elephant's Memory, into that part, and he started singing things that were like, you know, right at the people. I mean, it was like, I don't care if you like it or not. I'm not trying to make you buy my records. And I think that's a whole nother level. Now, I want to ask you a question. I know we just have 11 minutes left, but you're in New York City, okay? And I've asked, I've interviewed. Last time you looked, you look out the window, Lou. Make sure you're in New York. I've interviewed guys from London, England, and Germany, and in different places. I've always wondered what part geography has in your songwriting, because I talked to a singer-songwriter not too long ago that they grew up in the Midwest, moved to the Seattle area, and it, she said
listen, I listened to that show of yours. What's her name? I listened to that.
Yeah, well, the that's artist. Amazing. Yeah, how that it changed her way she wrote. Now, how
her name is
how
like Lewis or something like that.
I have to go back and look at it. But what is that with you that is like New York City? Because, you know, I don't think there's any place in the world like it. Now, what effect does the city have on your songwriting?
Oh man, I don't know what to tell you. You know, John Lennon did move here. I'd like to stop talking about him, but he moved here and kind of almost as a pioneering move. I mean, this gets deep, John. New York is a power spot on the earth, just like the Egyptian pyramids. Just like certain sacred places, New York doesn't look like a sacred place. It looks like a capital of business. It looks like a place of commerce and all this. There is a powerful feeling that everyone talks about right when you get into Manhattan.
Yeah.
Are we breaking up on the phone?
No, but I've experienced that exact thing you're talking about.
Yeah. I mean, I live in Brooklyn now, and we live in South Brooklyn, which most people don't even distinguish that. But the point is, it's a little more out by the ocean. It's nice because I'm just like a half hour from the city. But I grew up in the East. I didn't grow up, but I mean, I say that because when you move, I moved here by myself at the age of 19. I didn't have a friggin' friend in town. And it was overwhelming at the time. That was so long ago. But I kind of think I had a certain adult growing up in the East Village, and I did. But living in Manhattan is almost overwhelming. And so it's kind of cool to just be like a half hour from it and get some fresh air, but be able to kind of feel the power going back in there. And the power is subtle. You know, it's not going to be like everyone's like, oh, the power. But, you know, a few things I could say to your question, like, nice thing about New York, like I'm into Buddhism, and people have said, well, why don't you go to Tibet or why don't you go to India? And I would very much, especially at this point in my life, I would love to do that. But my answer has been because the great beings from those areas come here to New York. Everything comes here to New York. So if you just live in New York, all the amazing, powerful people of the world pass through here, like, all the time. And so there's definitely a sense of getting, you know, a good feeling for where people are at. Just living in New York, I mean, the diversity here and the realness is just incredible. All that said, John, man, I don't know how that especially influences my songwriting. It was just a choice I made years ago when I was younger, like where to kind of plant myself, sit down and live, and that's it for me.
Well, I think that's a great answer because it's like this to me, I'm always, I don't know if it's jealous or envious of songwriters because, you know, I think, wow, that's such a gift and to be able to do that. And then, you know, the experiences that you have, no one else has ever had those. So, you know, you have that talent and ability to relay that through your song. So, Lou, I think you do a great job on that, and I really appreciate what you do. And my guest is Lou Barlow of True Nature, and you can go out on his website, truenatureband.com. And the latest release is You Shouldn't Have to Shout So Loud. And please pick that up, and you can go on to the download sites and get that. And Lou, I've really enjoyed talking to you.
Hey, likewise, man. Maybe we could even play some music sometime.
Yeah.
you play bass, right?
I do. I've got a couple of them sitting here staring at me.
I really appreciate this.
And What I'd like to do is maybe we could do another interview sometime down the road.
Great.
I know that you probably have some expectations and some plans to put out new music. And
absolutely, yeah,
that would be great. Well, thank you so much for listening,
John,
tonight.
I appreciate your depth, man. I hope it's interesting to people listening. But like, gosh, as a songwriter, I'm like really, really psyched to speak with you. I would love to speak with you again. That'd be awesome. And the next year, I'm hoping to really have something different out there.
Well, thanks, Lou. I appreciate it. One of the reasons that I think the show is a little different than other shows is the fact that when I'm talking to Lou Barlow of True Nature, there's nothing else in the universe going on but us, and we want people to know about your music and where it's coming from, and, you know, people go back and listen to the interviews, and I think that, you know, it's an honor to talk to you, so thank you, and anything you'd like to say in closing?
Just blessings to everyone. You know, I mean, I know that might sound kind of silly or something, but you know, I just wish everyone very well. It's a mixed time to be alive, and I just hope that people veer on the positive side and get to the higher ground. That's what I'm trying to do with the music of True Nature. Every band is a little bit of a gathering of like-minded people, and that's my motivation in putting on shows and stuff.
Well, Lou, thank you so much, and have a great evening. And
thanks,
everyone, for listening. And we'll talk to you next week.
Great, man. Next time. Cool.